It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 78 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening because I got a really special interview with Alan Grant, a name many of you should be familiar with because of his work in Batman back in the 80s and 90s, and who is still producing great comics, two of which we talk about, including Channel Evil and the Loxleys in the War of 1812. We talk about his career, we talk about the creation of characters, we cover a whole bunch of areas, and I'm sure you're going to want to listen because it's a wonderful conversation. Then I review this week's comics, and everything wraps up with Gianluca Glaser joining me for this week's news and previews. There's a whole lot I'm anxious to share with you, so let's get on with the show. It's great to talk today with Alan Grant, legendary comics writer, and who's done a lot of good things on Batman and has a couple of interesting and great projects that are out now, including Channel Evil and the Loxleys and the War of 1812. How are you doing today, Alan?
Hey, quite well, thank you, Wayne.
Good, it's good to talk with you. The thing I want to start with, of course, is Channel Evil, which is coming out here in the States in trade paperback form, I believe in March, just came out in the previews, and I was just looking forward to other people getting a chance to read it, because I've had the chance, and as I mentioned to you before we started recording, this is one of those books that scares the heck out of me. I really like it. I'm often not scared by comics that are supposed to be scary, but this one, wow, this one is really, really scary, so I really like it quite a lot.
I'm glad to hear that.
Now, how did you come up with the concept for Channel Evil?
Well, I've read several books on channeling over the years, although I've never tried it myself. I'm too much of a coward. But I was always fascinated by it. Mm-hmm. And when Renegade told me they were wanting a horror book, Shane Oakley and I had been wanting to work together for quite a long time. And basically, Shane is a horror artist. Mm. And I don't often do horror work because, if truth be known, I'm a bit of a coward, and I frighten myself, so I try to avoid that. I'd rather write humorous material. But when I asked, I sent Shane samples to Alexander at Renegade, and he liked them and thought they might be the perfect artist for it. And I think that he was, actually. I think he's done a brilliant job. And like I said earlier, it scares me as well. As, I usually find that the best stories that I write are the ones which have a direct emotional impact upon myself. You know, I usually think, well, listen, if I feel that way, the reader's going to feel that way too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great story. It starts out with a guy by the name of Jez Manson, who is described as a slick chat show host. And don't we have enough of those?
Yeah, well, I don't like them very much, so I thought, well, this would be a good time to seek revenge.
Well, what he does, apparently, is he invites somebody who can channel on, and that person invites him to do it. And he gets a lot more than he bargains for, and he ends up, it's pretty early in the process, we find out that he's got somebody that's going through him. And I guess is it pronounced Baal or Baal?
Baal.
Baal, okay.
Baal, yeah.
Yeah, and so he starts losing track of time and stuff. And what's really scary to me about the book is that we don't really get to see a lot of Baal, but we do see the aftermath of what he does.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes in comics we have mustache-twirling villains who explain what they're up to. And the good thing about this book that I really like is the fact that he doesn't explain exactly what's going on, that we find out after the fact. And I just thought that was something really scary about the book.
Good. I chose Baal because the choice was to come up with a generic demon, just a made-up demon, which I thought wouldn't have particular resonance with anybody. But if I used, as a demon, an entity which used to be very powerful in this world. I don't know if you've read the accompanying short story, an interview with Baal, but that explains that in pre-biblical times, he was basically the big guy, the big god of the Middle East. Everybody worshipped him in one form or other, and it was only when Jehovah came along that he fell out of fashion. And every now and again, when the people were angry with Jehovah. They turned back to Baal. And then, of course, Jehovah wooed them away again after that. And in the end, Baal just got pissed off and gave up. So I thought I would give him an opportunity to come back again and see what he can do.
Yeah, and the part you're talking about is included in the trade paperback. I have not read that yet, so that's something I have to get the trade, if for nothing else, to read that. And I also want to have a good paper copy to keep, because this is a great story, just wonderfully done. Let me ask you a question as far as the formatting, too. You did this in black and white, you and Shane did.
Yeah.
Was there a reason for that?
I thought it would be more effective, to be honest, in black and white. I'm not a fan of horror movies. But the ones which I do like, for instance, The Cabinet of Dr. Cagliari,
mm-hmm.
I think it gives an added resonance to them, the fact that they are in black and white rather than in color. Plus, working in black and white on a horror story forces the artist to be more imaginative. He can't, you know, just splash red paint all over the place. And I think that it worked out. I don't think that it would have looked as good in color as it does in black and white. And I say that knowing many fine colorists.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I preferred it in black and white.
Well, I think it gives it a more spooky feel.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I do like that. Yeah, I like that a lot. Oh, man. Now, it's in the States. It's going to be $19.99. It should be out in March. The time to order it, of course, is right now, because
yeah.
The order forms have to go in before the end of January. So this is one of the reasons why we're talking, is so that people can actually order it. It's under Renegade Press. If you look in the previews, which I have right in front of me, it's on page 331. So you're definitely going to want to get it. Is there plans for any more Channel Evil coming, or is this going to be the end of the story?
It's not the end of the story, because evil never dies, and Baal has, even though it was stated in a low-key way, Baal has transferred himself or attached himself to one of the other players in the story. So the way that it ended, I mean, it was the end of Jesse's story, obviously.
Yeah.
And his girlfriend and his agent and several hundred more people. But the end is left open so that he can come back again. Because like I said, evil never dies, you know.
You know, I got a huge kick out of the title because it has sort of a double meaning. You know, he's a TV host, and of course they deal with channels, and so it's Channel Evil. So it's not only Channel Evil in the sense that this is a television program or a channel, it's also Channel Evil in the sense that he channels evil.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I got a kick out of. I love double entendres like that kind of thing. Are we thinking out here? And I like that because it makes me think a little bit more. I did have to say one thing, too, is that you kind of have your fun with the other characters you mentioned, the agent and the girlfriend and stuff like that. Nobody gets out of this unscathed, it seems to me.
No. No, they don't. They obviously didn't all deserve it, although I think that to a certain extent the agent and Jez himself did. But the girlfriend was a total innocent in the affair, you know. She was just a bystander, really. But that's the way of things, you know. People tamper with forces that they shouldn't, and people get hurt.
It's kind of like an Outer Limits setup. Outer Limits people were forever experimenting with things they shouldn't, and it always ended up badly.
Mm. I have a couple of friends from my school days who, we experimented with what they call Ouija boards and Holden seances. Mm. And although we were only teenagers doing it for a laugh, a couple of them were very badly affected by the experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a friend that used to be able to use a Ouija board, and the thing would fly around for her, and it used to scare the heck out of me.
Yeah. Well, when I started to think about it, you know, it quickly became not a joke at all.
Yeah, really scary stuff. So anyway, it's Channel Evil. Be sure to get it. If you're not scared by other scary books, supposedly, this one will scare you, because it scared me and continues to give me shivers when we talk about it. Something special. So let's move on to another book that you've been working on for Renegade that you got done. The Locksleys and the War of 1812. Now, last year, of course, 2012 was the anniversary of that. But it's still a really good historical book. I really enjoyed it quite a lot. Now, this one, of course, is color compared to Channel Evil, which was black and white. It's 175 pages, and you can purchase this, I think, if you go to the Renegade site. Do you want to talk a little bit about how this book came to be?
Yeah, well, Renegade, I have a good relationship with Alexander, and he told me that they were looking for a historical graphic novel based on the War of 1812 between Britain and Canada and the United States. Now, I've been a writer for 32 years, and I've prided myself that I never really needed to do research for any of the stories which I've written. But this one, for the first time, I had to sit down and do some serious research because, you know, it's all there in the history books, what happened when the battles were fought, where they were fought, what people were involved. And I had to find a way to make that interesting to the reader. So I actually quite enjoyed doing the research, although it's not my type of thing, and especially not historical research. I have very little interest in history. But I did discover some surprising facts. You know, I've come across recently cases of US politicians uttering phrases like manifest destiny. And reading through the historical accounts of the time, that phrase was first used in 1812 when America believed that it was its manifest destiny first to take over Canada, then to take over South America, and from there to take over the world. That's what American politicians were aiming for. Not to say that I'm biased in favor of Canada or Britain, because I think that Britain was an absolutely horrible colonial power, and lots of the things that are wrong with the world today are wrong precisely because Britain screwed them up when, you know, when it moved out of all the colonies. But I was impressed when I was doing the historical research by the fact that some of the Indians fought for the U.S. and other Indian tribes, Native American tribes, fought on the side of Canada and Britain, and that the Indians were actually aiming to set up their own independent state within Canada. And the real tragedy of the story, I mean, the war was bad enough, but the real tragedy of the story was for the Native Americans, because they didn't get anything out of the war. You know, although they fought and their greatest chiefs died in it, they didn't get anything at all out of it. And the lot has, to a large extent, continued to deteriorate until the present day. Another of the tragedies was the Battle of New Orleans. Now, before I started researching into it, I knew the Battle of New Orleans because of the song. In 1814, we took a little trip, which was a big hit for a guy called Lonnie Donegan. It was a number one hit when I was in my, I had to be about 8 or 9 or 10. And I knew all the words to the Battle of New Orleans. And I knew that the Brits were involved and that the Americans were involved, but I didn't know that there were any Canadians involved. And I didn't know that it was actually fought several weeks after the peace treaty to end the war had been signed. So thousands and thousands of particularly British and Canadian troops were slaughtered after the peace treaty had been signed. It was actually on board ship on its way to America while the Battle of New Orleans was being fought. You know, and that's the kind of crazy situations that arise with wars. Thousands of people dead for absolutely no reason because they'd already agreed on the terms of the peace treaty.
Well, they didn't have television back in those days or radio.
Exactly.
They couldn't communicate, and so it took a long time. Now, one of the things I liked particularly about the book was that you focused the war through the prism of the family, the Loxleys. And that humanizes the whole thing, I think, really well. It's fun. The family is a pretty big family, and they've got several different kinds of people involved. And I think seeing how the war impacted them really personalized it a lot. And I thought that was a great way to go about it.
Yeah, well, that was my intention. When I was thinking first about how I was going to tell the story, it became obvious that I needed some way to keep it personal throughout. And because families in those days were multi-generational affairs, you know, the grandparents lived with the parents and the children. If the children got married, they were likely to live with the parents as well, particularly if they were running a farm. So there was room for plenty of characters to be affected in different ways by the war. And I grew to quite like the members of the family. You know, I thought they were a very decent lot. But it showed how ordinary people are affected by war, you know. And, of course, all the atrocities that were committed weren't just on the American side. The Canadians and the British and their Native American allies, they committed just as many atrocities. And it's always the innocent people who get hurt. War is a horrible, horrible subject because it doesn't matter what you say about it, they keep coming back and fighting some more, you know.
Yeah. The book is called The Locksleys and the War of 1812. It's 1999. It's full color and it's hardcover. And the website to go to get it is renegadeartsentertainment.com. You can order that there. And I think Channel Evil you can probably get there too. But you can get it in your local shop as well because it's through the previews. So as far as like Renegade Arts Entertainment goes, I guess Alexander Finbo and you have a good relationship. So I'm looking forward to more good things coming out from you guys.
Yeah, well, we're exchanging emails right at this moment. Well, not at this moment, but we were a couple of hours ago. About a couple of future projects that we want to get started on as quickly as possible.
Cool. I'm looking forward to that. It'll be great. Now, I wouldn't be much of a Batman fan if I didn't ask you a couple of questions about Batman real quickly. Well, your time on Batman, you created several characters that are still going on. You had a hand in the Ventriloquist, and then you created Anarchy and a Magdalena, I think it was Magdala.
Amygdala.
So you created a whole bunch of characters as a creator, and we've seen some of these characters move on, particularly like the Ventriloquist and Scarface. They've gone on to be on the animated show and been several places, and other writers have taken over and started writing them. How does that feel when you see your children being used by other people like this?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I tend to avoid those stories.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah, but so that I'm not going to be affected one way or another. There are certain writers who I would be happy to see take over a character like Scarface and the Ventriloquist, but he's not the sort of character for an ordinary superhero writer to handle at all, because he's much more British and he's quirkier than a lot of American creations. So rather than be disappointed, I tend to avoid anybody. So I've never seen anybody else's version of a ventriloquist. I've never seen anybody else's version of Anarchy.
Okay. Well, they're still living on. I mean, it must give you some satisfaction that these characters do rise up and appear with Batman occasionally. I mean, Batman's got a very varied, a wide group of villains that he fights. And to create somebody who has legs and who continues on years after you've written them, I think that's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, I feel quite pleased about it. In fact, Anarchy is one of my favorite characters that I've ever created. When I stopped working on Batman for DC Comics, I saw one of the vice presidents and attempted to buy back the rights to Anarchy because I thought I could sell them elsewhere. But the vice president, who remained nameless, just laughed and said, no, 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 that's not how DC do things. We own the copyright. We keep the copyright. You know, I don't have a problem with that. I was willing to pay for the rights, but if they don't do it, they don't do it, and that's it.
Yeah, unfortunately, they can probably still use him. And like I said, he does appear occasionally. And the nice thing about him is he shows up when we don't expect him, which is a good thing about that.
And I've always been afraid that they would use him just as a what you would call the typical image that you get when you hear the name Anarchy, you know, a bomb-throwing maniac. Whereas Anarchy, of course, wasn't like that at all. He was only a teenager, but he was extremely thoughtful. He had thought through all the things that he was doing. So anyway, I don't know if they still continue with that or not.
Pretty much. He's pretty much got a lot going on. It's a very mental character in the sense that he thinks things out. He's got plans going when he shows up. He doesn't just sort of, he's not just chaos, you know.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
So that's a good thing about that. If you had the chance to write Batman again, would you do that?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Batman's my favorite ever comics character. You know, and has been since I was 4 years old. A cousin of mine had emigrated to Canada, in fact, rather than the States. But he sent back infrequent packages of American comics. And, you know, it was like the Justice League, Wonder Woman, Superman, John Jones, Manhunter, but my favorite was always Batman because he was the only one who was truly human.
Yeah, I share that with you. Batman's my favorite, very favorite. I don't mind characters with powers, but, you know, I can't be Superman. I'm never going to be invulnerable.
No, but you could be Batman. All you need is like 20 years hard training.
Yeah, that's the rub right there is the hard part. But it could happen. It could happen. Are there any other projects that you're working on that we should be aware of?
Hang on, I'll have to have a look at the list I was making earlier on, because so much. I took a week off before Christmas and went to a big convention in Mexico City.
Oh, wow.
And there were, I think there were 18,000 fans turned up at. And I swear that every one of them had brought at least one Batman comic to be signed. And many of them had brought my entire run on Batman to be signed.
Wow.
Evidently, the Mexican edition of my run on Batman had coincided with what you might call a new generation in comic reading. And so many people said to me, oh, your Batman was what got me started reading comics. And one guy even said, oh, the first series you did for Shadow of the Bat, which I think I called The Last Arkham, he said that that had been responsible for him becoming a psychiatrist.
Oh, wow.
So I hope he doesn't get the same kind of of subjects or patients as we do in Arkham Asylum. Anyway, as to what I'm working on, I'm doing a new series of Judge Anderson Sci for the Judge Dredd magazine in Britain.
And cool.
Because the Judge Dredd 3D movie, which came out quite recently, features Anderson as a 16-year-old cadet judge, I've been writing the odd cadet Anderson stories as well, which I'm enjoying doing. Anyway, they've asked me for another one. And they wanted to tie in with the one I'm writing for the magazine, which is set 35 years later in time. So I'm quite looking forward to that. Like I said, I'm working on a couple of new projects for Renegade, one of which is an adaptation of a book by a well-known Canadian into comic book format. I got a call today from a movie company that I last heard from in 2008, because the project we were working on, 2008 was the year of the financial crash, and their bank went bust and couldn't provide the money that they were supposed to provide. But they called me today and said that they've got things back together again, and they're coming up to see me next week.
Oh, wow, wow.
I still have plenty of work to do.
Oh, great.
I'm also working on, although this has got little to do with comic fans, I have a German friend who is a very accomplished musician. He leads his own band, and he's trying to break into the English-speaking market. So he wants me to co-write the lyrics to
some
of the songs with him, which I've done a couple for him in the past. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, and one of them has become a mainstay of the band performances. So I'm hoping that we can emulate that.
Do you want to say which band that is and what the song is?
Well, the name of the band changes from CD to CD. The one thing that is constant in it is the artist's name. He's a guy called Peter Weigand, W-I-E-G-A-N-D. And like I say, he puts together different bands and they play different types of music. So they've got jazz stuff out, they've got more rock. Anyway, the latest that they're working on is much more rock and roll influence.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what comes of that, you know. It's feels quite good to be sent your, instead of free copies of a comic, free copies of a CD, you know. That's got your credit as a lyricist. I quite enjoyed that.
Very cool. Well, I was thinking, because you do like the Loxley's book and Channel Evil and Batman, you can write quite a variety of things. Not everybody can do that, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't really discriminate. I've written about a dozen novels as well, mostly based on, well, for instance, I did the adaptations of the Batman movies. I did novelizations featuring Superman and Lobo and The Martian Manhunter, Justice League children's novel. I've written several screenplays already, but only two of them have been made into movies so far, and neither of them set the cinemas alight, although that wasn't the real purpose. I don't know if you're aware, but the character that in the States is called G.I. Joe. Over here he's called Action Man. The same character, the same accessories that you can buy for him, but they figured, I guess, that British people wouldn't know what G.I. was so long after the Second World War, so they rechristened him Action Man. And I wrote a 45-minute Action Man movie.
Oh, wow.
Which, yeah, you know, it's all different experiences. It keeps you fresh. I also worked for a couple of years on the TV show Ace Lightning and the Carnival of Doom, was a team-up between BBC Worldwide and the Canadian giant Alliance Atlantis. And they did two seasons worth of it. It was a big hit in this country. It was the number one kids show in the UK.
Wow.
And they sold it throughout Europe, but they couldn't sell it to America, and that was their prime target. The Americans just weren't interested. I don't know why not, because, you know, even though I was involved in the show, I was the only UK scriptwriter on it. The actual graphics and the storylines were brilliant. And the director was American, and the producer was American. And they filmed it in Canada, but made it look as if it was in America, you know. But I guess that the Americans just weren't fooled anyway. They never bought it. So.
Well, you ought to send that to BBC America, because they're looking for new programming, it seems like. They've got new British programming that's coming over here, because Doctor Who is big here, and other ones, too. They did Copper, which was a big deal. So you might want to forward that to BBC America and see if they've got any interest in it.
Oh, right. Okay. Maybe I'll do that. Yeah.
Just a thought. You know, not that I have anything to do with this, but it sounds like something that they might be interested in. Well, Alan, it's good to talk with you. Let me again say that if you want to get The Loxleys and the War of 1812, you go to RenegadeArtsEntertainment.com. It's $19.99 for a hardcover, full color. And if you want Channel Evil, the trade paperback will be hitting the stores here in the States in March. So looking forward to that. And, of course, if you see the name Alan Grant someplace, I would highly recommend you buy the book or pick up whatever it is, because it's going to be really good. You're going to get a good story, and you're going to get something that's interesting and very character-oriented. So that's really good, Alan.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. That's high praise, Wayne. I'm not sure I deserve it, but I'll accept it very happily.
Well, I'm sure you do. So we'll look forward to getting more of your stuff in the future, and good to talk with you.
Okay, hopefully we can talk sometime again.
I like that.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
Let's take a look at this week's comics. If you see the name Jeff Lemire anywhere on a book that you're considering buying, buy it. This is for those few of you who don't already know that. This week we get to the end of one of his ongoing titles called Sweet Tooth. It's a very powerful conclusion that choked me up as I read it. In fact, I still get a little teary-eyed when I'm thinking about it. Here's a description. Gus's journey comes to an end, and the fate of the hybrids is revealed in the final issue of this acclaimed Vertigo series. I got into this book after Mr. Lemire's debut on Animal Man when the New 52 arrived about a year and a half ago. I was so smitten with his writing there that I started picking up his other stories, and now I never miss something that he's been working on. Sweet Tooth is this kind of mix of X-Men and The Walking Dead. There are mutants, but they don't look like young actors who spend most of their time in the gym. And the world is a dark and grim place, dangerous for both man and beast. As always, family plays an important part in a Lemire tale, so be sure to pay attention to that. Unlike the rest of the issues, this one takes several leaps ahead in time so we can see where everyone ends up through the stories that Gus is telling. I'm sure with all the wonderful opportunities Mr. Lemire at DC has these days, it was a tough choice to bring this title to a close, but it's done so poignantly and so profoundly that I couldn't help but really feel the effect of the book when I got to the final pages. I love the cover particularly, which harkens back to the very first one, and the appearance of candy bars, which earned Gus the nickname Sweet Tooth in the first place. Then we see a phrase that we rarely see in comics these days. The end. Imagine that. I'm glad I embarked on this wonderful ride as early as I did. If you haven't read this book, I'm sure collected editions of the final parts will be out, but you don't have to wait to get the early editions. Those are already available. Be sure you get them. Now this week's New 52 reviews. Detective Comics number 16 continues the epic death of the family event, and of course you're going to want to get that. Wonder Woman's daughter Fury appears in Earth 2 number 8. Action Comics number 16 has Superman taking on a Super Doomsday. Swamp Thing and Animal Man each continue the Rotworld story from their perspectives. Green Lantern New Guardians Annual Number 1 focuses on Star Sapphire, while World's Finest is another great outing from Paul Levitz, this time with my very favorite artist, George Perez. Batwing Number 16 has the hero after Africa's Most Wanted. Stormwatch has the permanent transformation of one of the team's members. This month's Green Arrow finishes up a battle with a character named Harrow. The Phantom Stranger meets Justice League Dark, and the new Dial H continues its odd ways. Other books out this week you're going to want to buy include, from DC, The Human Bomb Number 2, Legends of the Dark Knight Number 4, and Smallville Season 11 Number 9. From Boom Studios, we get Higher Earth Number 7 and Superbia Ongoing Number 3, always an excellent comic. From Dynamite, we get Jim Butcher's The Dresden Files Ghoul Goblin Number 1 of 6. IDW has Doctor Who Volume 3 Number 4 and True Blood Ongoing Number 8. From Image, there's Clone Number 3, Guarding the Globe Number 5, the long-awaited Infinite Vacation Number 5, Perhaponauts Danger Down Under Number 3, and The Walking Dead Number 106. From Marvel, we get First X-Men Number 5, the wrap-up of that miniseries, Secret Service Number 5, and Superior Spider-Man, which had been called Superior Dr. Octopus Number 1. And finally, from Valiant, we get Shadow Man Number 3. And those are the books that came out this week.
It's time once again for news and previews, and with me, as always, is Gianluca Glazer. How are you doing, Gianluca?
I'm doing well. I'm a bit less nasally today than usual.
Okay, well, you know, it's the holidays, it's the winter, it's these kinds of things happen.
Yep.
All right, so what's in the news that we need to know about?
Certainly. Well, January's previews is out for books coming out in March, and there's some interesting titles coming out. We got... Let's see here. Constantine Number 1 from DC Comics. The star of Justice League Dark is unleashed in an all-new ongoing series from Robert Venditti and Renato Guedes. So that's pretty cool, although it is kind of a shame that they had to end Hellblazer on the Vertigo side to relaunch Constantine on DC. And then, of course, you know, you don't have Ian Edgington writing anymore.
Right.
Doing for quite a while, actually. Other cool titles in January previews, there's the second hardcover volume of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, based off the book. Image Comics has a couple of interesting titles. Beast of West, number one, from Jonathan Hickman and Nick Dragata. The award-winning team behind Marvel's FF brings us East of West, a new sci-fi western, whereas the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse are dystopian America's last hope. And they're trying to kill the President of the United States. Quite the interesting concept there, isn't it?
Different.
The other Image comic is Five Ghosts, The Haunting of Fabian Gray Number 1. After a tragic encounter with an artifact known as the Dreamstone, infamous treasure hunter Fabian Gray was possessed by five literary ghosts and has been granted access to their unique abilities. Writer Frank J. Barbieri and artist Chris Mooneyham take us on a world of action, black magic, exotic locales, and literary illusion. Boom Studios is doing a Adventure Time mathematical hardcover trade, volume one. They describe it as bigger, bolder, and more mathematical. The all-ages hit of the year is now available in a deluxe, larger hardcover and totally mathematical edition. I'm not sure what that means.
Are they going to teach us math? Is that what's going to happen?
I guess so. It's pretty cool. Adventure Time has been a very successful book for Boom, so for deciding to go a unique way of presenting the product. This is something I'm sure you're going to like. Over at Dynamite, they're doing Mark Waid's Green Hornet Number 1.
Yeah, I saw that.
Mark Waid, of course, is writing it, and Daniel Indro is going to be the artist. The Hornet faces his most dangerous enemy ever. An egotistical, arrogant Britt Reed. In his alter ego as a powerful newspaper publisher, the Hornet has lost control, becoming a social crusader far too sure of himself and of his judgment. But when he finally goes too far, an innocent man pays a terrible price, and the legend of the Green Hornet begins its cataclysmic collapse. The next two couple of projects are interesting to me, you know, for personal reasons. Archaea is releasing out a Hawken hardcover volume one. Mm-hmm. This is based off of a video game that, like, this person, Mark Long, developed. And I had worked with Mark Long when I was the director of marketing at Radical Publishing. Mm-hmm. Mark Long was the guy behind Shrapnel, along with Nick Sagan. That was mm-hmm. their creation, and that was something that they were wanting to develop as a video game. Hawken already is a video game. And this is something that's reaching out to other media, such as graphic novels. So this particular graphic novel, Hawken Hardcover Volume 1, is written by Kang Lee and Jeremy Barlow. And it's going to have various artists on it. Cody Chamberlain, who I also know is the artist on one of it. And there's going to be various guys. And Kang Lee, the writer, is also the cover artist. And it's really gorgeous looking, I have to say. Mm-hmm.
Great.
So it's based on Meteor Entertainment's free-to-play, massively multiplayer online shooter, Hawken, an immersive, fast-paced game featuring giant mechs on a technological world. This original graphic novel serves as both a prequel and source book for the game world. It offers players a glimpse at what came before the game and what might come in the months ahead. Now, let me ask you this. I mean, this is obviously for fans of the big Battletech mech warrior kind of world. Were you ever into that growing up?
I never was, honestly, but I think I bought a lot of these kinds of books when they came out in comic form. Some of them did. And some of them I liked, and some of them I wasn't all that enjoying. But I have to say, if Arkay is doing it, it's definitely something that's going to be interesting, because one of the things they do the best is to do these hardcover graphic novel stuff. And boy, you know, they have done a wonderful job on that, so I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah. Definitely. And when I was, you know, like in the 80s, I loved Battletech. And, you know, I had friends in high school that, in grade school, that played like the role playing game, you know, with the dice and stuff. And I also was more into the video game version. There was actually a computer game that was pretty cool that you were able to, you know, build up, get new mechs, and then start shooting up these other ones. And I think even they made a version for the Super Nintendo at one point. Now, this next book, this is from another company called Renegade Arts Entertainment. It's Channel Evil, and it's the trade paperback collection. It goes on sale actually the day after my birthday, March 13th, 2013. And here's a little synopsis. Jez Manson, slick chat show host, bites off more than he can chew when he channels an ancient source of evil live on primetime TV. Unleashing terror and carnage upon the world, Jez knows he's on the edge of the abyss, but the lure of fame and fortune is too strong. This collects a four-issue series plus original and variant covers, 8 pages of sketches, and a new unreleased 16-page strip called An Evening with Bale.
It's a wonderful book. It's just amazing. It's one of the very few truly scary books that I've ever read. Just absolutely, I think, even when I think about it, it gives me shivers, because what happens is this guy sort of, he has a guest on who can channel spirits, and they convince him to give it a try. And of course, who does he get but the baddest of the bad spirits going through him. And he starts to lose touch with reality as things go along. God, it's just amazingly good. Alan Grant, of course, is the writer. Wonderful stuff. Oh, just, I was just so amazed at how wonderful. But Renegade does a lot of stuff that I really like.
Cool.
So that was just a great story. I just love it so much. I hope that's not the end of it. I hope we get a whole lot more.
Oh, definitely. I mean, Shane Oakley's artwork's pretty unique, too. You know?
Oh, yeah. It's black and white. That's one thing that may turn some folks off. But I really think it's an amazing book. It just is something, if you like horror, you're probably going to really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because I'm not much of a horror fan, but it really grabbed me, and it just didn't let go.
It certainly got a very unique style, though, too. You know, in addition to being black and white, I don't know quite how to describe it. It reminds me of, like, a bit of Dean Haspiel. Mm-hmm. A lot of sharp edges and stuff, but it goes, like, very surreal.
Mm-hmm.
Like something like out of almost like Tim Burton-ish. If it was like if Tim Burton just did purely animated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it in me in terms of what I saw interesting in the January previews. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about?
Well, you know, there wasn't a lot this time that really grabbed my attention, because I think in March they're trying to cut back a little bit. They're, at this point, I imagine, waiting a little more for the summer to hit so they can release more. So there really wasn't a terrible amount of stuff. The thing that interests me, one of the things that's coming, is Jeff Lemire is taking over Green Arrow.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to that tremendously because I'm going to be fascinated to see. You know, Green Arrow is in a renaissance right now. He's got the Arrow TV show, which I recently watched the pilot again and noticed some stuff that I didn't notice before. So that show is really, really good on the CW. It's one of the more intellectual, smarter shows on that network. And with Green Arrow getting taken over by Jeff Lemire, who I really like, I think we'll really get the good thing about that. And the Sennies moved off to Katana from Birds of Prey. So, but it's such a good thing. That's the thing I'm really looking forward to having. But other than that, there wasn't a terrible amount of things in there that really caught my attention.
Right.
Just it was just one of those months that was, that doesn't mean I'm not going to buy a lot. I will, you know, but I really liked the stuff that's already there. There wasn't anything new or sparkly. I didn't see a Mouse Guard, for instance. I didn't see some of the stuff. Now, there was one thing from Archie Comics, their Red Circle. They put those superheroes out, and I had a dickens of a time getting those comics, and they're putting them out in a trade. So I will be getting those. What's happening is they're you know, Black Hood, Shield, all these ones that they used to do under Red Circle have now come out, and they had a miniseries which nobody sold in this area where I live in the Washington, D.C. area. And so I'm grateful when trades come out because that gives me a chance to catch up on them. So I will be getting that. But other than that, that's about it what I saw in the previews.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I want to move on to, I guess, some other kind of news in the comic book world.
Okay.
In television, the Small World production company Tolan Robbins Production has settled its suit against Warner Brothers, according to The Hollywood Reporter. Terms were not disclosed. The suit for over $100 million had alleged that Warner's negotiation with its sister companies, the networks WB and CW, were not at arm's length and had the effect of reducing the amount of profit in which the executive producers were to share. So, no details on what the settlement was for that suit, but obviously, millions and millions of dollars.
I mean, I'd say.
Yeah. Sad news. Famed comic writer and novelist Peter David has suffered a stroke while on vacation in Florida.
Yeah.
This was announced on his website. At the time it happened, he couldn't see properly and couldn't move his right arm or leg. He's currently getting the extent of the damage sorted out and report with further details. Later on, there was like some better news, though, basically stating that he, you know, is able to move more easily and is immediately after the stroke able to sit up in a chair at a time. Mm-hmm. And it looks like he will be soon released from the hospital and go to a patient rehab facility as soon as the condition allows him to.
Mm-hmm. He was on vacation when this happened. He was down in Florida. And the terrible truth was that their daughter felt really guilty because she kind of thought this all happened as a result of going to Florida, which she wanted to do, which is kind of sad. But, you know, the truth of the matter is it probably would have happened no matter where he was.
Right.
You know, these kind of things don't depend on location to take place. But his wife, Kathleen, has been updating on her blog pretty much every day, telling people what's going on. The thing that they're asking people to do right now, which I find interesting, is to buy his stuff through Crazy 8 Press, which gets him money, which might help pay his medical bills. I'm not sure what kind of health insurance he has. But the ones that they're promoting are this one called Pulling Up Stakes, which is about vampires, parts 1 and 2. There's the Camelot Papers. There's something called the Hidden Earth Saga, Darkness of the Light, Height of the Depths, and those are the ones, if you buy those books, and those are mostly novels, they're not really comics yet, but those will go money straight into him and help him pay his bills.
Mm-hmm.
So we hope that he gets better soon.
He has done
a lot of stuff. He started out as a salesperson for Marvel, interestingly enough, and since when he had access to the Hulk figures, when he was writing the Hulk, because he had been in sales, whenever he noticed that the sales started to dip, he'd make a major change in the Hulk book so the sales would go back up.
Oh, that's very smart. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good of him to do that. It was pretty good to notice those kinds of things.
Right.
But he's been exclusively Marvel for quite a long time. He and DC had a falling out.
Right.
And I think that's over Supergirl. He turned Supergirl into Matrix, which was this shapeshifter who got sort of angelic powers. And poor Peter David, he had to go and explain to Dan DiDio what this was all about, and it took him about a half an hour. And Dan DiDio says, "You think people are actually going to buy a book that takes you this long to explain?" And he was not very happy with that, so he shifted over to Marvel, where he's been exclusive for a while.
Right. We wish him the best over here at Wayne's Comics.
Yeah, I see him at the conventions often, so we were just getting ready to go to Farpoint in February. He was going to do a big panel on Big Bang Theory, because he's not sure if they're laughing with us or at us, so that was his going to be one of his panels. And of course, he does one on his projects and stuff. So,
yeah.
Well, we hope he gets better soon.
Definitely. In other news, over in DC, Scott LaBelle is going to be leaving Red Hood and the Outlaws with issue number 18. And he's going to be replaced by James Tynion IV,
ooh,
who, you know, works with Scott Snyder and does the Talon book.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice.
Yeah, very much so. I'm sure it's the case of Scott LaBelle deciding to leave because he's got many other projects, including Superman. In other comic book news, Renegade Arts Entertainment, we mentioned before with Channel Evil. Over on Bleeding Cool, they debuted the cover for Shame Pursuit, graphic novel with Laverne Kaczynski, who's the writer for it. He does the coloring of Animal Man for DC. And the artwork is done by John Bolton. So Bleeding Cool basically is shown like the John Bolton cover for the book, but John Bolton does all the interiors as well. So it's a follow-up to Shame Conception, which came out like, you know, a little over a year ago.
Yeah, I like that book a lot. I remember reading that. Very, very different. It's fantastical, and it's fantasy, but it's more of an adult fantasy. It's not so much of a kid fantasy. I would definitely not want a young child to read this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Same here as well, too. And this is kind of interesting news. This is going to happen Saturday, January 12th, over in Harlem, New York, at the Schoenberg Center for Research in Black Culture. They're going to be launching the first Black Comic Festival. It's described as a dynamic festival for young people that celebrates the rich tradition of Black superheroes. It features a screening of the film White Scripts and Black Superman, Black Masculinities in Comic Books. There's going to be a pop art exhibition of Black Kirby, a visual homage to the legendary comic book artist Jack Kirby by artists John Jennings and Stacey Robinson. There'll be panel discussions, hands-on workshops, and exhibit tables that premiere Black comic book artists from across the country. I think it's going to be free, and all ages are welcome.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Definitely. And then it's getting to be that time of the year. Submissions are now being considered for the 2013 Will Eisner Comic Industry Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Publishers that want to submit entries should send one copy of each of the comic books they wish to nominate and include a cover letter indicating what is being submitted. And, of course, you have your categories, best short story, best single issue, best continuing comic book series, best limited series, best new series, best publication for kids, best publication for teens, best humor publication, best anthology, best digital comic, best graphic album, best of new material, best graphic album of reprinted material, best reality-based work, best archival collection, best U.S. edition of foreign material, best writer artist, best penciler inker, individual team, best painter, best lettering, best coloring, best comic-related book, best comics journalism, periodical, or website, and best publication design. So, you have all that. I remember last year, Mark Waid swept up those awards, multiple categories. And then I think, unfairly, Dark Horse Presents got best anthology book. I didn't feel it was the best anthology. I felt there was a number of other books that were better, that aren't as popular with the mainstream. But that's just my opinion.
Okay.
That's kind of it for news for me. Is there anything you want to cover?
There's a couple things real quick I want to talk about. Okay. I meant to mention this during the previews, but I forgot. We're starting to see some of the things about Free Comic Book Day percolating. They're starting to advertise some of them. The one that stood out to me, of course, because I'm a big fan of Mouse Guard and of Rust, both from Archaea, they're going to do a flip book with Mouse Guard and Rust in it this time. So that was the one that stood out to me. They're going to also do a book that's going to promote Beware the Batman, which I'm looking forward to also. And that moves into the next story I want to talk about real quickly. The DC Nation block is back on Cartoon Network, thankfully, which I really enjoy. I think those shows, right now it's Green Lantern, and it's also Young Justice, and those were great fun to watch again. I hope they don't take a nosedive and disappear again. Those were great fun. I don't know why Cartoon Network did what it did, but it got a lot of screaming taken at it because of it. So it's nice to have it back. My understanding is this is the end of Young Justice. When they run out of new episodes, there's no more, which is too bad because I really like that show. I think it's really great. So that's going on. Then also there's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who is rumored to be taking the role of Batman in the upcoming Justice League film, also has another role that he's being considered for.
Yeah.
Deadline says that he's being considered for Peter Quill or Star-Lord in the Marvel film Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
So, of course, he's one of nine people being considered for it, but, you know, who knows what they'll do eventually. It's probably going to have something to do with whether he gets to do Batman. If he does Batman, I doubt they're going to want him to be in Star-Lord as well. So, but anyway, he's up for that. So this guy is definitely turning into some kind of a superhero-type guy. Which is kind of fun. It's interesting to see when actors do those kinds of things.
I love him very much, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. But, you know, gosh, it's hard to believe that, you know, he was that kid in Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, it didn't happen overnight, you know, his success. You know, it took like several years and doing certain small films, but... Yeah, you know, I guess probably that Christopher Nolan film kind of like helped kickstart his career big time.
Yeah, and then of course being in The Dark Knight Rises helped as well.
Yeah.
He did very well in that, so that was a good one. And the last bit of news is that come January 29th, The Dark Knight Returns Part 2 will be out. And we're starting to get little clips released here or there on it, and boy, it looks just as good as the first. I dearly love that first part, and it made me feel like I was reading the Frank Miller book all over again, which is quite a, you know, something to say. That just blew my brain away back in those days, but just wonderful, wonderful stuff. The second and last part will be out January 29th. Michael Emerson, who was in Lost and is also in Person of Interest, does the voice of the Joker. We didn't see much of him in the first part, but I think we're going to see a lot more of him in the second. So I'm looking forward to that greatly. So that'll be something interesting to see.
That's a unique voice for the Joker. How it worked.
I'm not sure how this is going to turn out. I can't see him cackling and stuff like that. I'm going to be fascinated to see how he does it.
Okay.
You know, it'll be interesting to see. But I'm looking forward to that greatly. That's only a few weeks away, so I thought I'd mention that.
All
right. Okay, as far as comics coming up, what comics are you looking forward to?
Certainly. This is for January 16th, 2013. Mm-hmm. There's some interesting stuff coming out. Dark Horse is launching Black Beetle, No Way Out, issue number one. It's going to be part of a four-issue miniseries, and kind of using the term super noir.
Yeah, I liked it really well. I read there was a one-shot that came out, and it's done by Francis, and I can never get his name right, but he works on The Flash, Arapur, or something like that.
Right.
I bought that when they put a special out, and I really liked it, so I'm grateful we're going to see more of that.
Yeah. For DC Comics, they're doing the trade paperback version of Batwoman Volume 1 Hydrology.
Mm-hmm.
They had done like the hardcover edition of that a few months ago. They're finally releasing the trade paperback.
Mm.
And then, kind of sad, it's the last issue of Frankenstein Agent of Shade.
Yeah.
Series ends with number 16, but of course mm-hmm. the character is going to be in Justice League Dark.
Mm-hmm.
Things are a bit bionic over in Dynamite Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
They have the Bionic Man versus Bionic Woman number one,
mm-hmm.
with a ton of variant covers of all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like this was promoted a while ago. I don't mm-hmm. know, is this book kind of late? You know?
Possible. They had talked about it a while, that this was an obvious thing that should happen.
Right.
But, you know, it takes a while for them. Dynamite, I think, got burned with Green Hornet because they did all these Green Hornet books, and they had like hundreds of them coming out.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the whole thing just imploded. And I think they're afraid to do that with Bionic Man, so they're doing things slower.
Sure. Yeah, because the Green Hornet film didn't do probably as well as expected.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have Kevin Smith's Bionic Man number 15 coming out. Mm-hmm. It only has 3 covers.
Wow.
I know. It's kind of good, you know, kind of getting long in the tubes, don't you think? You know, this is supposedly based off of a movie script.
Yeah.
You're on issue 15.
Well, they got past that. They're actually doing other stories now. They got past where the script ended, and they're moving now into other things.
Yes, I figured that.
Yeah.
It's just really one big, long, continuous movie.
I wonder how long they're going to have Kevin Smith's name on it.
I wonder, too. And then, of course, you know, our friend Arvin Nelson, Lord of the Jungle, number 11, goes on sale. Lucio Prio is a really brilliant artist. I've met him before. He does the cover for that. Over on IDW, you have The Crow, Skinny of the Wolves from James O'Barr. James O'Barr also does a retailer incentive cover for that book. And then we've been, every few weeks, we've been talking about the Mars Attacks crossovers. So this is the Mars Attacks, The Real Ghostbusters one-shot goes on sale. It's got a couple of retail incentive covers, one from Rob Glory, and then another one from Mike Alfred.
Hmm.
So, interesting. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, the last couple of weeks I've been talking, whenever we get to this part of IDW, I talk about My Little Pony.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of brony fans out there, mm-hmm. and female pony fans. Mm-hmm. So this has gone to a third printing. Issue one. So you have your My Little Ponies covers A through F third printings. And then you have the box set third printing cover, which collects A through F for you. It's one big box set.
Wow.
I know, it's just licensed to print money there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Over on Image Comics, I think this is the final issue. I'm not sure, but Creator Owned Heroes number 8. I know the series has been canceled.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
But, yeah, it's from Jimmy Palmiotti, Steve Miles. I think they recently got Darwin Cook involved with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, not sure if it's the last issue, but if it's not, it's close to the last issue. And then Happy number 4, you know, Grant Morrison's series, goes on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And then over to Marvel Comics. This one I don't really care for, but I just had that the title just stuck out at me. I had to mention this. Mm-hmm. Alpha Big Time, number 0.1.
Oh, not that. I hate that.
It's not issue 0.
Mm-mm.
It's not issue 1.
Mm-mm.
0.1.
I'll wait till 0.11 comes out, and then we'll...
I'm going to just do it incrementally, 0.2, so that way when they get to, like, 10 issues, they can get to issue 1.
Hate that stuff. I just do that. That is so, you know, we don't want the numbering to just, so we know issue 0 apparently sell well, and you can only have issue 1 time, so you've got to do this stuff. So,
right.
I hate that.
We got a second printing of Captain America number 1. John Romita Jr. Does a variant cover for that. Captain America 3 goes on sale with a John Romita regular cover and an Alex Maleev variant cover.
Mm-hmm.
The Dark Tower, the Gunslinger, the Little Sister of Illyria, mm-hmm. Trade paperback, goes on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And then launching from the Marvel Now, you got Savage Wolverine number 1.
Yeah,
he's got several covers here. Ghost Quesada is getting on it with some sketch variant covers, and we got a blank variant cover.
Yeah, get somebody else to draw the cover for you.
And a young baby variant cover, too.
Yeah, I hate that stuff. I do, I'm sorry.
Oh, well. And that's it for me.
Okay. Let me start from Marvel and go backwards. There's one I really like, of course, Daredevil 22. And speaking of Mark Wade, Indestructible Hulk number 3.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that.
Which has been actually pretty good. It has a slower pace. I notice these days that Marvel books tend to be much slower in the pacing than other comic companies. I guess they're spreading things out with the eye on the trade paperback, but... That doesn't do much for me. But anyway, we go into Image at this point.
Wait, you didn't mention, I didn't mention this because I thought you were going to, but what about Adventures Academy?
That's the final hardcover. Yeah, the $24.99 final exams. Yeah, I'm sorry to see that go. I'll have to get that just to add to my collection because I really like the book. Now they got Avengers Arena, which is supposed to take its place. Ack. Yeah, so anyway, I'll leave that go. But let's get into Image. Get rid of that bad taste in my mouth.
Okay.
Super Dinosaur number 17, and there's Saga number 9, which seems to be doing good. Although I'm starting to lose interest, I hate to tell you. Then Morning Glories number 24 by Nick Spencer. Hoax Hunters number 6, Michael Morrissey, which I really like. There is also America's Got Powers, which I've actually come to like. It's a very interesting little story, and it has to do – talk about Hunger Games or whatever it is. That they tend to have this story based on a bunch of younger heroes that are fighting it out on a reality show.
Right.
And it's actually pretty good. I actually caught up on it, and I liked it pretty well.
It's kind of got an erratic schedule, doesn't it?
Oh, very. It was really late. Looks like they're trying to get back on schedule because issue number 4 recently came out. So they must be trying to get things done. Anyway, that's a good idea. Then we get to IDW Publishing, which I really like. Jericho Season 4, number 2 of 5. I like that because it's based on the TV show that I enjoyed so much. So that's a good one. As we get into Dynamite, there's a couple other things we ought to mention. There's Warlord of Mars, Deja Thoris, number 21, which I like. It's related to the other Warlord of Mars books. There's also the Green Hornet Year 1 Special, number 1, that I like. So I'm going to be getting that. Now, you mentioned one of the books that DC is canceling as of the 16th. There are two others that we should mention. There's Grifter number 16 is the final issue, and Legion Lost number 16 is the final issue. At the same week, a number 1 comes out. That's Threshold number 1. I think Mr. Giffen has something to do with that. So that'll be interesting to see. And also there's Batgirl number 16. I always like Batgirl. Batman and Robin number 16. And, of course, Batman number 16, which is going to be wonderful. God, I love that book. The Joker storyline, Death of the Family, is just amazing. You don't know what he knows, and somehow we've got to find out. So there's also Deathstroke, Demon Knights, Green Lantern, the animated series, which I like, Ravagers, which is okay, Suicide Squad, which is pretty good, Superboy is good, Team 7 number 4, which is all right from DC. And those are the books coming out that interest me that week. Anything else we should talk about before we call it quits?
Oh, no. I feel like I've talked too much.
Oh, okay. Well, on that note, then, we will come to a close for this week's news and previews. As always, John Luca, thank you, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Excellent. Same here.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I have an interview with Sam Johnson, creator of Cabracini, Voodoo Junkie, Hitwoman, and Geek Girl, among other good things. He'll update us on his projects and give his opinions on a few comics as well. So I'm sure you're going to want to listen to that. But until then, keep reading your comics.
You'll never win, Joker. I'll always be here to stop you.